We have a very special guest this morning, Tim Harris. He's running for 1st District Congress. Welcome in. Welcome to Bartlesville.
Hey, glad to be here up in Washington County. I've met a whole bunch of great people, went over to Arvest Bank and met a lot of the folks. John Bonsack invited me over there, and I got to present myself and the people of Bartlesville and Washington County. I'm just so happy to get to know them. And, you know, being DA in Tulsa County, that was kind of my home turf. And now I get to branch up into Washington County and Wagner County and just to be able to meet the people and talk about what their dreams and futures are for their kids and grandkids. And that's part of the reason that I'm running.
So you are a DA in Tulsa County. Tell us a little about yourself. Tell us a little about what you're trying to do.
Well, I'm a public servant. I'm not a politician. I had to get elected in a political world when I ran for DA in 1998. But once I got there, I realized being a politician is not a good thing. Being a public servant is. And so I was responsible for the constitutional right of public safety for individual victims, for families, for the community at large. And that meant serving all victims, regardless of political persuasion, of origin, of sex. It was like I was there to make sure that they were protected by the Constitution. After 28 years of being in public service and 16 as the elected DA in Tulsa County, serving as the longest sitting DA in Tulsa County history, I kind of felt the Lord tap me on the shoulder and say, I've got another chapter for you. So I left and went back to Oral Roberts University, where I received my law degree in 1983 from the O.W. Coburn School of Law. It had been gifted in 1986 to CBN University and is now Regent University. But I went back and started teaching pre-law, and this last semester taught constitutional law. Now, it had been 33 years since I really delved into constitutional law at this depth, but it was really one of the springboard events in my life. Also with teaching at Oklahoma Wesleyan for President Everett Piper, taught in their MBA program a course called the American Foundation for Free Enterprise, the American Framework for Free Enterprise. And those two courses really helped me solidify that when I see what's happening to our Constitution and our basic constitutional rights, that I could no longer stand on the sidelines, that I really had to get back in and again be the voice for the people of the 1st District. And that's really the motivation for me to become a candidate to represent the people of the 1st District as their congressman in Washington.
So what do you see as happening with the constitutional rights that are going on? What do you see that's happening that is making you want to run?
You know, it's funny, as you look historically, and it's funny, I don't think, and this is no slam on millennials, but they don't spend as much time looking historically at things, okay? You know, every totalitarian society started first with restricting people's religious rights. So the First Amendment of the Constitution says, Congress shall make no law establishing a religion nor prohibiting the free exercise thereof. I think we're seeing cases all over the nation where people have conscientious beliefs based on their religious tenets that are being challenged in the marketplace. I've never seen a social contract in the United States where to be an active member in the marketplace, in commerce, that you had to leave your religious beliefs at the door to be able to play in that game. And we're seeing that people are saying, hey, I can't be involved in that because of my religious beliefs, whether you know, you're a baker or a photographer or a t-shirt maker or whatever, or a florist like Ms. Stutzman up in Washington State of Washington. There are becoming rulings in courts and in municipalities that are forcing people to conform against their religious beliefs. I think that's a real issue that has to be looked at. Secondly, in the First Amendment, our freedom of speech. It's absolutely amazing to me that the birthplace of the freedom of speech in 1960s, Berkeley in California, is now the impetus and birthplace of what they're calling the anti-free speech movement. And many, many different conservative speakers were barred from campus, and all these speakers asked is that if it became disruptive, that the disruptors would be expelled and they would be able to move on with their presentation. The administration said no. There was a group out there, I think it was called Whatever Was Necessary. They actually justified shutting down free speech that they didn't agree with disruption, with violence on the campus of Berkeley, over $100,000 in damage and fire set, all because the new definition of tolerance became this: I will tolerate you if you believe what I believe. If not, I am not even going to tolerate you having the podium to be able to have the free discussion of ideas. The problem with that is we are the envy of the world based on our freedom of speech and the marketplace of ideas, and now we have this rebirth. In fact, it's been coined Antifa, which is short for anti-fascist. And they're calling conservative thought and conservative religious thought fascism. Well, historically, I have to ask myself, do they know who Mussolini is? Do they know who Stalin is? Do they even know what Adolf Hitler is? If you want to look at fascism, those are good examples. But conservative thinkers and conservative political policy and conservative religious thought is not fascism. In fact, you know, the message of Jesus Christ is respect and dignity and forgiveness, and how that could ever be classified as fascism. So those are, you know, those are some really basic rights that have been the foundation from the framers of our Constitution from the very beginning, and they are being challenged. And I think I have the skill set, hopefully, to go to Washington to protect those and many other rights. I mean, our Second Amendment right to bear arms. Now there's new talk with the shootings of gun control. I'm just telling you, I was a prosecutor for 28 years. Gun control takes firearms out of the hands of the lawful citizen. Those who are not lawful citizens will always find a way around in the black market to get their hands on firearms. And so gun control is not going to make people safer. In fact, it's going to put them in more jeopardy. The Second Amendment now is being challenged again. So again, we live in a time where basic rights that we grew up accepting as a basic foundation are being challenged. And I think there needs a voice in Oklahoma and a voice for the people of the First District to take a stand against some of those policies.
I think that's an interesting point that you bring up about the about gun control and whatnot. I think we see a lot in the media and a lot in the news, and just today's times, it's unfortunate, but there's a lot of shootings, whether it be accidental, whether it be intentional, whether it's at a school, whether it's in the parking lot of McAllister's out here. And I think a lot of people are calling or thinking that controlling guns and just taking them away in general will protect them, but you're saying that they won't.
I, you know, as a prosecutor for 28 years and the district attorney in Tulsa County, the second largest jurisdiction, we had about 650,000 people in Tulsa County. I saw firsthand that those who are evil and intent on evil will find a way to accomplish their task, and that these are all instrumentalities. Don't forget this. They're inanimate objects. They are used by human beings. And so it's kind of like, you know, we don't want a Manchester here. And that's why this, you know, the second part of my platform as I'm running for Congress here in the First District is safety and security. We don't want a Manchester where people are strapping bombs to their chest, blowing up our children. We don't want a London Bridge where people are being mowed over with vehicles and people are being knifed to death. You know, it's amazing that the framers of the Constitution talk about common defense in the preamble to the Constitution, but also in Article 1, Section 8, it talks about common defense. The framers of the Constitution really believed that the government's first and foremost responsibility to its citizens was to protect them from evil. And so we really have to step up our game, because I think there are ideologies out of there that want to wipe out what we call the American dream. And in the old days, they wore uniforms that you could identify. And these days, they don't wear any uniforms. They want to infiltrate. and with a religious thought in their minds, they are willing to give up their lives to make this point. That is something that we have to protect, because if we give safety and security to the American people, they have the ingenuity and the hard work ethic to move forward, and which has created the greatest economy on the face of the globe, the envy of the rest of the world. We need to take our regulations off and let the marketplace lead, and again, we will become a national and an international powerhouse, and the rest of the world will also benefit from the what I call the moving towards the American dream: ingenuity, fortitude, consistency, persistence, hard work, good education. That's what I call the American dream. And really, I became the first director of crimes against children in Tulsa County under Bill LaFortune. And back in 1988, under David Moss, I was actually on the first specialty team protecting children. I really have a heart for the kind of world that we are going to pass off, and the kind of Oklahoma that we're going to pass off to our children when we hand the baton to them. What kind of leadership, what kind of freedoms, what kind of liberties are we going to be giving to them? I benefited from the American dream. I was able to get a great education at a Christian university. I got to study the law on the foundation of God's holy word, and then apply our Constitution and our legal principles and statutes to it as I was DA. Those are the kinds of benefits that I want to pass on to the generations that come behind us. And it's constitutional, right? We're passing these liberties on to our posterity, as it's referred to in the preamble to the Constitution. And so that's why I'm so passionate. It's not about prestige, it's not about power, but it is about people. And I want to be the people's advocate to be able to secure the freedom that they have now and the future freedoms that they want to give to their children and grandchildren.
Well, I'm looking at our time here. We're going to take a quick little breather here. We're going to take a quick little break. But I'm excited to come back from Community Connection more with Tim Harris coming up in just a moment.
Bartlesville First Baptist Church is focused on the life-changing gospel of Jesus Christ. As we learn the God's Word, love God's people, and live God's mission, this vision will continue to thrive until He comes. We are committed to vibrant worship, relevant Bible teaching, genuine community, and the urgent spreading of this gospel. We are resolved. We will not be silent. Come worship with us at First Baptist Church, 405 South Cherokee in Bartlesville. Services are 8:30 a.m. and 11 a.m. each Sunday.
Is it time to start thinking about a new car? But the thought of dealing with the large dealerships is just too intimidating, too confusing? There is an easier way. Tallgrass Motors. Tallgrass Motors doesn't play all the confusing games the large dealerships play. Tallgrass Motors has continually been voted Bartlesville's best used car dealer year after year. Go by Tallgrass Motors today and enjoy looking at over 60 used cars, trucks, and SUVs, all priced to save you money. Tallgrass Motors, Highway 75 North in Bartlesville.
And we're back with Community Connection. Tim Harris here with us this morning. You know, you were talking earlier about trying to protect the Second Amendment, trying to protect the First Amendment, trying to protect all these rights and things. Say you win the election, you get to Congress. How are you going to fight for that?
I think reestablishing respect for what has been termed the greatest legal principle ever devised, and that is what is called the rule of law. Why the rule of law is so important to Americans' freedoms is both those who govern and those who are governed are judged by the same standard. And that's really what makes us the envy of the rest of the world. You know, our values, our beliefs, and our principles are all wrapped up in our respect for the rule of law. And I think we've kind of moved away from that. And, you know, as we look at the framers of the Constitution, and, you know, we have, the articles of the Constitution, the first article spells out what we call enumerated powers of the legislature, of Congress, and the power of the purse, right? We have the executive branch, right? And then we have the judicial branch, and they all have different functions, and they keep each other in balance, the balance of power between those three areas. But I would say this, one of the things that I think the legislature and the Congress has done is they have abdicated some of their responsibility to regulatory agencies that are now running roughshod, and it's kind of like the tail has begun to wag the dog. And one of the things that I was looking at last night is there's something called the Congressional Review Act, and I'm doing some more research on that, but Congress can disapprove agency rules, and I don't think we're doing that enough. The Congress cannot abdicate to regulatory agencies their responsibility, so I think they have to get back to what the Constitution ordained them to do, and that is pass good laws that serve the people under the rule of law, and not just let these regulatory agencies run roughshod with their rules. And one of the things I was looking at was the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau under Dodd-Frank. It has not been applied equally, and we have compliance burdens, okay, and it's difficult to compete with foreign counterparts when smaller banks are held to a different standard than the larger banks, because to go in to do an audit of a large bank is very troublesome, very difficult, a lot of hard work. And so, like in rural Oklahoma, including a place like Bartlesville, these small banks know who it is that they can trust to make a loan to, and yet the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau slows that process down, slows down the American dream of people buying their first home. So it's things like that that originally had a good idea, but under the rule of law, we've got to circle back around and make sure that we haven't set up so many regulations that it's slowing us down rather than moving us forward. And the way we do that is we have to define the difference between principles and preferences. And what I mean by that is I'll never move away from my principles, those core beliefs, life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, to save our kids' lives as we look at Roe versus Wade, a definition of one man and one woman for marriage, a biblical definition. Those are the kinds of principles that I'll never step away from. But preferences can't be confused with principles, otherwise every issue becomes a war. And I think what I'm trying to express in that is right now in the legislature, we kind of have this gridlock, this political gridlock. And instead of being there in behalf of the people, it's like, well, if you're a conservative Republican and I'm a Democrat, then whatever you come up with as a Republican, I'm going to oppose, and vice versa. Okay, my own party, the Republican Party, we look at ideas that the Democrats come up with and we say, it doesn't really matter what it is. If it's been put forth by a Democrat, I'm going to oppose it. Well, this last 10 months, I was studying with Chuck Colson, Center for Christian Worldview, and one of the things that has really changed the way I look at people in life is in Genesis 1:27, it says, God created man in his image and likeness. And what that does is the other side isn't the enemy. I look at them differently. We need bipartisan support to get away from the partisan politics that has us pounding heads against one another and not really accomplishing much for the people, to look at bipartisan support that actually serves the people. So you ask me what's the one thing that I would do when I get to Washington to make sure that the policies and the laws that we pass actually serve the people that we're there to represent. And the difference between being a politician and a public servant, if you're a politician, you're there to protect your job and to get reelected. I don't need to go to Washington for a job. I have a job. I love the job that I'm doing right now, teaching at Oklahoma Wesleyan and at ORU in the pre-law program. So I'm not going there for a job. I'm going there to serve the people. And so however long that is, and I do believe it's a finite period of time because the framers of the Constitution talked about citizen legislators, that I will have the ability to go there for a finite period of time. serve the people and be there with a mindset that says, I'm here to serve them, not to feather my nest to get reelected. And I think when you look at that and that's your philosophy, you will be able to actually get something done. So in essence, it comes down to this. I'm not going there to become something. I know who I am. I'm going there to do something, and I want to do something for the people of the First District.
All right, we're wrapping up time here. Last two questions. We're going to ask two questions, and we'll wrap it all into one. Loads of school, loads of schooling, loads of experience. You said 28 years as a prosecutor. How has that helped you be the best candidate? And if people want have any more information, they want to see what you're about, do you have a website, do you have any contact information, they can get more information about you.
I think what differentiates me from any, at least at this point, of the other Republican candidates, one, I'm not running against anybody. I'm running for something. I'm running for the position of Congress for the First District. There won't be any negative campaigning coming out of the Harris camp. I respect all the other candidates. We're all Christians, and so you won't see that coming out of me. But the one thing that I think I have as the voters look and differentiate between the candidates is I have a track record. I have 28 years of public service, 16 as an elected, answerable to the people. They know I'm transparent. They know I'm trustworthy. They know I'm honest. I can't be bribed. I can't be bought. And I will be truthful to my call to the people. My website is votetimharris.com. Also Facebook, Vote Tim Harris. My telephone number is 918-850-0026. You can contact me. You can go on my website. We try and answer every question that comes to us the best that we possibly can. But when you're looking at different candidates that you want to support to be your voice, I have a track record that you can depend upon. 16 years as an elected official, you can count on me to speak the truth to the people of the First District, and that's what I will do if the Lord blesses this campaign and I become the next congressman of the First District.
All right, Tim Harris, Republican for Congress. We appreciate you coming in this morning.
Hey, God bless you, and thank you for allowing me to present myself and for the voters here in the First District. God bless you. I'll do my best to represent your dreams, your futures, and what you desire for your children and grandchildren. God bless you.
This is Sherman Jaquess, the pastor at Motoka Baptist Church.